For July the 10th, 2020, we talk about Valley, the upcoming price raise for next-gen games, and we ask you about your favorite character growth arcs. Welcome to Level 335. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back after taking a week off for...
Not kinda, really.
Yeah. So we didn't have...
Not for you and me.
Right. So we didn't have a regular show last week. I hope people enjoyed the bonus level that Jala and I did about the Steins Gate series. The initial response seems to be positive, and it was fun to talk about that because it's not really something you can talk in depth about in a loose kind of area like this, you know, where you don't want to go into too many details because it's so story rich, but it was a good time. It also made sense to take a week off because of the holiday, et cetera, et cetera. But it is good to be back. Jala, in the pre-roll, you said you had a story for the start here.
Oh, I got a story. It's a bit much. So, you know how I train early in the morning. It's dark. I roll out to my office. I walk up the steps. I unlock the door. Put all my stuff up, start setting up so I can do my training, so on. Go back inside, whatever, for a little bit, grab my coffee. When I was coming out to my office to do my usual, something dark fell from somewhere, and I looked down, like, oh, where did the... Because, you know, it's dark outside, there's no light on, and I'm like, okay, well, what was that? Huh. All right, whatever.
Did it fall from the stars? Like, was it not loose from the firmament, or...?
There's a teeny tiny awning on my little top step, and so it was from up there. Well, I come into my office, and I'm like, I wonder what that dark thing was, and I set my stuff down. And then, you know, I'm wearing a black shirt. Okay. I look down at my black shirt. There is a gigantic roach, like an outside flying roach on the front of my shirt. And I'm like, holy crap. And so I pick it up from the bottom really carefully and then bounce it as, you know, flip it, you know, do like the towel flick kind of thing.
Yeah.
As hard as I can. And it goes flying off and goes and skitters behind my calendar. And I'm like, okay, gotta go get the spray. So I run inside, grab the spray, come back out. It's still behind the calendar, so I try to smush it behind the calendar first, and that failed. And then it started flying out, but because I had sort of smushed it, it didn't get that high, and it just kind of went over towards some boxes that I've got in a corner, and I'm like, okay. And then here's me, like, spraying everything.
Yeah.
And luckily, that spray worked really, really well.
Okay.
And it died very quickly. But, like, that was a very early... I hadn't had my coffee yet.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the hell was going on. And all of a sudden, I look down, and there's this gigantic roach. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's on my shirt. Ah! You know, it's so...
I'm going to need you to define how gigantic this roach was. Are we talking, like, the size of a MacBook? Is it the size of an iPhone? Is it the size of an iPhone Plus?
It was about half the size of my iPhone.
Ugh. Wow.
It was a very large roach.
Yeah.
So, a very large one. So, a large outside flying sucker. And, yeah. So,
he's just prepping for the late 2020 plague of insects, yo. He's the advanced scout.
He's here to scope everything out. Yeah, that sounds like the kind of cockroach that, like, every region has a euphemism for it, so you don't have to say it was a big fucking cockroach. Like,
yes.
the big one that I remember was when we would go vacation in South Carolina. You know, the house that we rented, you know, never had cockroaches. It's like, oh, that was a palmetto bug, you
right.
know,
yeah.
or like, oh, it was yeah. a water bug or something like that. No, uh-huh. it's just a German cockroach. Yeah.
Yep. It's just a big dang roach. So yeah, that was my most exciting story. My second most exciting story, it's not nearly so exciting as that, because that really woke me up that day, was that I have taken up pole dancing in addition to burlesque. So yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
Nice.
So it's fun because it is a physical challenge, although because I do all my lifting, like I rolled in there with an advantage, you know, like I had a skill modifier. And so I'm already doing stuff. Like on my second class, I was doing a move that one of the listeners, Robin, said that he learned in his second year of pole, and I just did it in my second class. So I think I probably am going to be moving up to intermediate as soon as I learned the vocabulary of moves well enough. So, yeah, that'll be a thing. And that'll be fun because, you know, like you can do all kinds of crazy Cirque du Soleil stuff on a pole.
So. I just really want to learn the move that, like, Jackie Chan does every movie where he spins around the pole and, like, kicks the dude in the face.
Oh, that's not that hard. Come on.
Oh, does it? Does it matter? I still can't do it.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That's not that hard for who?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Brajala and Jackie Chan.
And my, like, everything is possible for my.
Yes. Yeah. True. This is true. Yeah. No, your cockroach story reminds me. It was like midway through last week. I was rolling my garbage bin down to the curb, and I saw like a lump out in the yard. I thought maybe you know, the wind blew like a clump of leaves, you know, like out of the tree, like a small little limb or whatever. And so I just, walked along, and then I heard it move and make like a little chirping noise. I looked, mm-hmm. Oh, it's one of the skunks who lives in my neighborhood. it was the big mama skunk. And I just, I couldn't see because, you know, it was dark out. Yeah. It was nighttime. You know, and a skunk won't spray you unless it's cornered. So I just kind of, I kind of just left my cart where it was, and I walked back into the house. I waited for 15 minutes and went back out, and then moved it the rest of the way. Yeah.
When I used to go, when I was doing running quite a bit, and I used to go to the track in the middle of, I say in the middle of the night, very, very early morning when it's dark and nobody's there. I would get on the track, but because it was very dark, there were also a bunch of critters. So I'd see possums, I'd see skunks, just whatever out there. And so, yeah, like I'd just be doing my track work and looking over, oh, there's a skunk. Okay. As long as I don't get close to it and freak it out, it's cool.
Yeah.
So I just had to watch where it was. Armadillos walking by. Okay.
Yeah. Armadillo seems like it'd be one that would be really rough to trip on.
Yeah. Probably.
Well, I mean, if Donkey Kong has taught me anything, that's a one-hit kill.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I mean, giant cockroaches and pole dancing aside, how was your holiday? Did you do anything for that?
No, I distinctly did not. I was hanging out at home. I did record a Monster Dear Monster, I guessed it on that podcast again, to talk about the 80s movie Legend with Tim Curry and Tom Cruise, and that was a lot of fun. If anybody likes that movie
sounds
at all,
like quite the pairing.
Yeah, well, like Tim Curry as Darkness. Oh my God, go look up that movie and go look at Tim Curry as Darkness and tell me that is not automatically like an awesome movie just for the makeup effects. Anyway, like if you like that movie at all, I would recommend going and listening to that podcast episode because it is baller.
Cool.
And it features yours truly talking about a movie I'm passionate about. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been forever since I've thought about that movie.
I've never heard of that movie before. So thank
you. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Every Tim Curry role is a treasure.
I would highly recommend that I would highly recommend that you do this. It's very hard to find it because you have to get a physical copy nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Legend, the theatrical release is super, super chopped up. The director's cut overall is the better movie, but it's only available on discs like DVDs and Blu-rays. They do not have it digitally anywhere, unfortunately, but the director's cut and the theatrical release are basically two entirely different movies with different tones and different themes. So, yeah, quite interesting indeed.
Yeah. Let's see, David, how are you? What'd you get up to this past week or weekend?
Not a whole lot. Trying to learn Qigong, so been reading up a lot on that, looking for online classes, that sort of thing. So that was basically a significant portion of my my weekend. So if anyone has any suggestions, feel free to send them my way. But yeah, that was pretty much just, you know, reading reviews and, you know, that sort of thing all weekend.
But why,
very boring weekends.
why would that be more difficult to find than other instruction?
A couple things. One, it's a lot of it is just like hippie new age stuff.
Okay.
And not like, well, a lot of it is the bad hippie new age stuff, you know?
Right.
I guess I should say. Also, a lot of it is, you know, the Chinese government, you know, trying to manipulate things, you know, that sort of thing for their own purposes.
No. Oh, well.
And in particular, finding martial arts based Qigong is very difficult.
Okay. Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I had a pretty good weekend. I went down to Portland to visit my friend Brian.
Oh, cool.
Ooh. And yeah. So we got to watch the fireworks in his neighborhood. Apparently it was a new experience for a lot of people who haven't been around neighborhoods that have a lot of fireworks, but it is very similar to being in Ohio where everybody has a lot of fireworks. So
yeah,
it's,
see,
you know, National Traumatize the Dogs Day.
Yeah.
It is, but like, actually I was surprised. Because of how bad COVID is here in Houston right now, all of the local fireworks were cut off. And so it was actually fairly quiet. There were people popping fireworks in the neighborhood a little bit, but Pooh Bear was actually doing all right. That's my parents' dog. She's very cute. You can see her on my Instagram. Amid all the workout posts.
And ironically enough, looks nothing like a Pooh Bear.
Pooh Bear, because I would call her like, well, my mom would call her Poodle because she's a Schnauzer Poodle mix, a Schnoodle. So okay. My mom would just call her Poodle. So I would call her Pooh. And then Pooh, of course, makes me think of Pooh Bear.
Mm-hmm.
So I just called her Pooh Bear.
Math checks out.
Yeah.
No.
So I really like around here, what they did is Macy's put on fireworks like over the course of the weekend in all of the boroughs.
Okay.
But in order to prevent like a huge crowd coming and not social distancing, they basically would just announce it like 20 minutes before it started.
Nice.
Huh.
I don't know. That's kind of creative.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, and people can still see them. I mean, it's just...
Right, exactly. Well, yeah. And like, since, you know, there was one in pretty much all the boroughs, like, no one needed to come for, you know yeah. That wasn't local.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ben, what you said about just like, oh, people don't, you know, just they didn't grow up in Ohio. They don't know what it's like to just live with fireworks going off around them all the time. Absolutely the case. Over the weekends, you know, my story here is I had family over. My mom and dad, and my brother came over. It was really good. Greta was very sociable around them, which is good. But we were sitting in the backyard, you know, around a bonfire. We were waiting for the show to start. And like, you know, there were plausibly a couple of times where fireworks went off in the size and number that made us think, oh, that's weird. Is that the city show? That's not normally where they launch them from. No, it's just that people around us in our neighborhood have what appears to be like kind of professional looking fireworks that just shoot off all around us. And then when the city's fireworks are going, nobody does anything. And then immediately afterward, everybody else fires their own off all around you. So
America.
Yep.
There's one funny moment where after everyone had kind of gone to bed and it was around 11 or midnight, There was one house that was still shooting off fireworks. So I just imagined them. Well, I just imagined them having like a bunch of leftover and being like, I got to fire these all off before the fifth. I can't fire them on the fifth.
Oh, geez.
This isn't 4th of July, but still my story with fireworks is like, you truly have not experienced just overkill in fireworks until you've experienced like a Chinese New Year, you know, some place that's like a majority Chinese population.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking the streets, you know, the little like tissue paper from like Black Cat Fireworks or.
Yeah.
We're talking that literally inches deep on the streets from all the fireworks.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. Poor dogs.
Poor dogs.
Well, that sounds like some banter. I am curious to get to a spot where we can talk about some video games first, because this is the first time we've recorded after Duckfest. Thank you everybody for watching that. It was a rousing success. I really enjoyed our little block of that. That'd be fun to do again sometime.
Yeah.
But that is not what we're doing today. Instead, we've got the regular kind of show for you. We've got the grind, the multiplayer, and then the end boss, and we can get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, what have you been playing over the past period of time or so?
Okay. Some time since the last time. Okay. Well, first off, I had a really small note about Resident Evil Revelations. The last time I was on, I was talking about it because I played it. I have not gotten any further in that game because I dropped it to play other stuff just for a little bit because I needed to switch genres. But one thing that I did not say at all was that you play as multiple sets of teammates. There's Jill and Parker, Chris and Jessica, two characters whose code names are Jackass and Grinder, and I don't remember what their actual names are, but Jackass and Grinder are like the best names, so that's fine. And then also later on is Jill and Chris. The part that I stopped at is with Jill and Chris. But anyway, so I did not mention that, but there's different mix-ups, different teammates, and different sets of equipment and stuff that you get to toggle between depending upon which part of which chapter you are on. So, anyway, so that's one thing, because you play from different perspectives of the same story. And that's it. That's all I had to say about that. But the stuff that I've been playing most recently, the first one I will talk about is called Alternate Jake Hunter Daedalus, The Awakening of Golden Jazz. All right.
The way that you have it listed in Slack, because of the parenthetical at the end, which is, boy, is this a mouthful. It looks like The Awakening of Golden Jazz Boy.
Well, I'm not quite sure exactly what the Golden Jazz is quite yet.
Okay.
And how it has the to Golden do with Child, anything.
That was a great movie.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out the name, but I think I figured out a chunk of it. And I will tell you all about it as I discuss this game. However, the Jake Hunter series is called Detective Jinguji Saburo in Japan. So all I can assume from this is that when they brought Jinguji Saburo over here, they changed it to Jake Hunter because that's a mouthful of a Japanese name that a lot of people probably don't know what that is. But they can see Jake Hunter and go, that's a detective name. You know, like, okay, you know, whatever. That's
Jake's.
A pro tag. Yeah, right. Right. That's what I was like. I was like, is he hunting Jake's? Is that what's going on in this game? But anyway, in this series, the first game to receive an English language release was in 2008, Jake Hunter Detective Chronicles on the DS. And then there was a re-release of that with some extra stuff. And then 2018, they brought over Jake Hunter Detective Story Ghost of the Dusk on 3DS. Which I've not played any of those. The one that I'm playing, Alternate Jake Hunter, is a prequel. And I don't know why it's called Alternate Jake Hunter, but so it is. It is the alternate version that tells you a prequel of the Jake Hunter series, which is actually the Detective Jinguji Saburo series. Okay, well, this series is one of the longest running and best-selling Japanese adventure game series in history.
I had no idea this went back to the Famicom.
There are 19 main series entries and 25 mobile games with various tie-in media, including choose-your-own-adventure books, novels, manga, drama CDs, music albums, and so on. So, like, this is huge. And I never heard of it until, like, I saw this, and I'm like, what is this? It has a demo, and I played it a while back, and I was like, huh, whenever it goes on sale, I'll pick it up. And then it went on sale, and here we are.
Yeah.
So, here's the setup. A month ago, somebody murdered the main character, Saburo's grandfather, and his grandfather lived and worked in New York as a private detective. Saburo goes to New York from Japan in order to sort through his grandfather's belongings and also starts to investigate his death, wanting to know, of course, why his grandfather was murdered, especially since he was so well-loved and well-liked by everybody. He finds out that his grandfather's last word was Daedalus, and you have no idea what that is. So that's where the Daedalus in the title comes from.
Okay.
We're trying to track down what it is. Is it a place, an organization, a person? We don't know. Your grandfather taught you everything that you know. So
what Daedalus is.
Except for what Daedalus is. So I've only gone through about 3 chapters so far. They're pretty thick chapters, though, if you want to, you know, give a comparison. So it takes a little bit of time to get through. But in the prologue, you are a little boy who is learning how to be a detective while visiting your grandpa in New York. So this serves as kind of a long tutorial and sets up the world. It's just kind of a flashback that you have back to your grandfather. It also makes it to where you understand their relationship. So you see why this is affecting Saburo other than just the fact that he's your grandfather, you know, because like you lived apart from him the whole time. So why do you care about your grandfather? You know, well, because you have this very tender memory of him when you were a child and you visited and so on. So anyway, chapter 1 involves a trip down memory lane as you remember an absolutely crazy incident when you were little and staying at an American summer camp with some of your friends. And you're reminiscing with these friends who are now adults who pick you up from the airport when you come from Japan. So you're just kind of like sitting around and like having a brewski after you get off the plane. And then you're just talking about this crazy murder you solved as a child. So that was, you know, like that's how the game kicks off. And boy, like the boy, it was like it's this game is slow. It's paced very slow, even for like a visual novel. It's kind of like it feels almost like the beginning of Steins Gate, the original, with the pacing. It's slow so far, but when you get to the stuff in the chapter, it's like, oh, whoa. And like everything starts falling in together. And then you're like, oh, wow. Okay. Like chapter 2 involves tracking down the man suspected of killing your grandfather and uncovering the truth about his situation and whether or not he is the killer of your grandfather. So spoiler, he's not. He has dementia. And at the end of the chapter, it was really, really heart-wrenching for me because my grandmother had Alzheimer's and passed away from Alzheimer's many years ago. But so like as you're going through and piecing everything together throughout the chapter, though, it's really interesting because this guy used to be a very good friend of your grandfather's. So, you know, how could he possibly be the murderer, that kind of thing? And what would his motive have been? Anyway, chapter 3, which is the one that I'm currently on, involves Saburo going to a town name dropped by the guy with dementia who was a friend of your grandfather. And you're trying to uncover why this place was visited by your grandfather 20 years ago and what significance it has because, like Logan, the old guy, had told you that this place was dangerous and that your grandfather went back here sometime before he died, you know, was killed. So that's where I'm at right now is I'm trying to figure out what this place is and why, what it has to do with anything and what Daedalus is and whatever. Mechanically, you can move from location to location on a map with new locations opening up only after you unlock them from, you know, doing your detective work, which is, you know, of course, looking through items and situations and, you know, like environments and also speaking to different people and uncovering information. You can search each environment for clues. Most of what you find is actually pretty unimportant, but it's up to you to kind of suss out what has significance and what doesn't. Like, you go into a bar and you can see that there's a mirror on the wall. You can see that there's some postcards on the wall. There's some photos. And you can inspect everything, but not everything is necessarily important or may not be important at the time, and you need to come back to it later. And when you talk to people, you can select what you say to them. And when specifically trying to get them to tell you something or do something for you, you can also select your approach either to be flattering or threatening or placating or whatever, any number of different responses. Everybody requires a different manner of handling depending upon their personality. And you kind of get that through just talking to them and their responses to you as you're, you know, going through regular dialogue.
It's a little bit like L.A. Noir.
Yes. So as you learn new facts, you uncover branches of something that's kind of like a tree of knowledge in your mental orchard, which is a metaphor that your grandfather used that you have obsessed over, apparently, since you were a small child, and is now the theming of all of your clues.
Okay.
So you have like a mind orchard with a tree in it that grows when you find information. When you know enough, you can logic through the main question of that chapter and come to a decision, because every chapter has a main thrust to it, main objective. And this is kind of like a Danganronpa trial without mini games or tons of voices chiming in. Like, it's asking you questions for you to reason through, and you have to pick the correct responses. And then it just kind of like reiterates that information and says why this thing can't, you know, should or should not be true, you know, as a valid thing.
Right.
So anyway, that's how that plays out mechanically. There isn't like an item inventory or anything like that. The music to the game I find to be too simple to enjoy it, and it is pretty repetitive, so I actually find myself turning the music down quite a bit, but I keep it up high enough that I can still hear the voice acting. I like the voice acting, and I like the art, and like I said, the pacing is a little bit on the slow side, but the story so far has been compelling enough that I want to see it to completion anyway, and depending upon how it lands for me, I may go back and get the 3DS and DS games, you know, depending upon how that goes. So, but I definitely have to be in the right mood for it, because it's like, if I'm at the end of my day and I'm very tired and then I turn it on, I'm not going to last very long with the simple music and with the slow pacing.
There's a certain amount of friction. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of friction depending upon like how I am going into it. You know, but like if I'm just trying to relax a little bit and I'm fully alert and everything, then it's fine. You know, it's kind of like if you read a novel before bed, that can put you to sleep possibly. So, but it's good. It's good so far.
Nice. It sounds very similar, to like a Phoenix Wright mixed with like a Hotel Dusk, but without the logic puzzle, or without the, like, you know, manipulation and touchscreen puzzle kind of things. Yeah.
So, it, depending upon how this game lands for me as I progress through it, it may be something that I would recommend to you, Cole. At the very least, the premise and the general idea are good. I do not know how the DS and 3DS games are, but this is such a big series in Japan that I would think that this would turn out pretty well if it's, you know, one of the highest grossing adventure games ever in life. I mean,
yeah. You know. Yeah, I mean, Amazon has been convinced that I need this game for about a decade now.
Okay,
You know, and I have to admit that the title of the one for DS, which is the one that has been recommending, you know, based on, you know, just me liking Phoenix Wright and stuff like that, just yes. Jake Hunter didn't necessarily inspire.
Do anything for you.
Yeah, I wasn't like it almost looked or sounded like a shovelware. Like a shovelware hidden object kind of thing, right? Because those eventually hit the DS in a big bad way.
Yeah.
So on the subject of the name, I like to imagine that the alternate Jake Hunter is the guy who only hunts the Jakes with like that weird British sounding or spelling where there's a Q in it. Yeah, he's you know, he's the alternate Jakes, the jocks.
Oh, you mean like the author of Redwall?
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. Like that spelling of it. Yeah, I imagine that's what a alternate Jake is.
Yeah, not like our fifth grade English teacher named Mrs. Jake Hughes. Right. It was spelled the exact same way, but it was pronounced in only the way that you can, you know, pronounce things in Central Ohio, where something that is logically called Bellefontaine is called Bellefountain, you know, and a town called Marseille is called Marcelles. So
yeah, we've also got Lima spelled like Lima,
mm-hmm.
and Reading Road spelled like Reading Road. Like mm-hmm. we it's kind of Ohio's thing.
Yeah, it's spelled Worcester, but we call it Worcester. Yeah. Yeah.
What about Versailles instead of Versailles?
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, guys, do you have any other questions about this game, or can I move on to my other game now?
I mean, it sounds kind of cool to me, you know, it seems like it's not necessarily like exactly my speed because of the pacing problem, but I'm definitely curious. Yeah. I wonder if that's something where if you like went to one that was made earlier, the pacing would be a little bit more snappy.
That's kind of what I'm wondering too. If it has the quality of writing that this one does, the older ones might be the way to go. This one just seems like I said, it seems a little on the slow side, which is why I hesitate to recommend it, just for that reason alone specifically. But everything else about it, other than that, and like the music not being exciting, but you can always turn that down, you know, so that's not a big deal. That's about the only things I can complain about with this game. So, if any listeners have played the other Jake Hunter games, definitely let me know how those are and so on. And I would be interested to know. Moving on, the other game that I've been playing recently has a very boring and very simple name, Valley. That doesn't tell you a damn thing now, does it?
Oh,
except for the fact that there's a valley. There's valley, that's it.
Valley without winds, Monument Valley, Valley without wind too.
Stardew Valley.
So, I know, it's like,
Sweet
nope,
Valley
this
High.
Is just,
in the Valley of the Gods.
So?
For sales? No, I'm just
Ben, it's very lucky you are very lucky you are very far from me. Okay, so this is a first-person action adventure exploration game by Blue Isle Studios that was released in 2016. As of the time that we were recording this for the Steam Summer Sale, it is on sale for $2.99. I am playing the Switch version, so I didn't get that sale. I did get it on a sale, but I don't remember how much it was. From what I've read, it's about 4 or 5 hours long. I don't know how long I've been playing it, so don't ask. I have no idea. It doesn't have like levels per se. It's just like a big open world thing. So like, there's not a sense of how far you are in that real way. It has overtones that feel vaguely like a mixture of Mirror's Edge, Portal, and Bioshock is really good though.
Yeah, like, that's Bioshock, I can't ignore
that would
Bioshock
be like Resident Evil. Bioshock would be Resident Evil 7.
So I feel like Bioshock is where you go to get like off-brand organs and stuff.
Shaquille O'Neal, Bioshock, that
yeah,
type of
100%.
Shack.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not that type, unfortunately. It's Bioshocky with a tad bit of Fallout a little bit. But this is not really as polished as any of those. Fallout is in the retro advertising that I'll explain in a minute. Bioshock, I will explain a little bit. The other two things will be apparent without explanation. So you are a kind of wannabe Indiana Jones person, and you are out canoeing somewhere in some remote area, and you somehow crash land yourself inside of a cave. And when you exit the cave, you find yourself in this weird valley. You come across what's called a leaf suit. Leap effortlessly through air functionality suit. And some military equipment and audio logs from World War II, because the military was doing some kind of research here and using these things called leaf suits. The suit gives you the ability to run really fast, jump really high, and take and bestow life energy on critters around you and trees and whatever. So, so you are running, you are jumping, doing those kinds of things. So in that way, it sort of mirrors Edge or Portally. You are also linked directly to the valley. And so when you die, you are resuscitated, but it takes energy from the valley, whose life meter goes down until you gather spirit orbs. Look, I don't know what they're called in the game, but they're basically spirit orbs or will-o-wisp or whatever, and restore life to it. And that's because the leaf suit itself does that. It automatically does that when you die, but you also have manual control over it, like I said, where you can take and give life to things in the valley as you please with the suit. So,
that's just... The plot of Shekhar?
No, no.
Oh, I thought that was like the whole thing with that.
Nope.
So, you explore different forests and ruins and come across all these different creatures and stuff, both regular creatures and like I don't know, weird laughing glowing things, you know, like those kinds of things that you just naturally see when you go and die and suck life out of a valley. I don't know, the personal logs and such that you come across are really interesting, and that's the part that really makes me think of BioShock. And I want to know more about what the military was researching in this valley. The overall game has a lot of, like, built into the little bits of story that you get, because there's not, like, a big narrative, like, you're on some quest. You're not. You just kind of landed here, and you're trying to uncover stuff that you happen to find along the way. You know, it has, of course, reflections on life and death, and taking care of the environment. All of those things are important, because you have power over life and death, and the environment is directly affected by what you do. When you're playing it, it's a buzzkill when you are running and jumping, and then suddenly some kind of an obstacle kills your momentum, and then like you're no longer enjoying free flying around in this place. Kind of like a bridge gave way underneath me without warning, and then I fell to my death, and I had to start over from that, you know, the last save point, wherever it was. And that was annoying, but... overall, it's fun to jump around and run around everywhere, and it's very pretty. You find upgrades in the valley to improve your suit with new different abilities, and apparently later there are things that you fight, including a boss battle. But I don't know, because I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Yeah, I don't know that. So, I like that there's a possibility of combat in this.
I know. I'm like, it doesn't sound like it even needs that kind of a thing. Right. But I guess when you have the ability to take and give life and death, and you have a power suit, they just have to put in some kind of combat. I don't know why they need to. They could have made this. They could have just made this a fun Sonic does a walking sim, and it would have been fine. You know? Like, they didn't have to add all this other crap.
I feel like it's a bad sign when the pitch is more like, maybe there'll be a boss fight eventually. Like, it's like, well, shouldn't you guys have thought this through a little bit more?
Yeah, like, there's some kind of a boss. I think there's only one boss, like an end boss, basically, at the end of the game. But I don't know. There's puzzles and stuff. Like, it's not super puzzle-y. It's not super puzzle-heavy. But there are puzzle lights, at least so far. There may be more complicated ones later, but... yeah, it's just fun to just, like, you know, it's kind of like another relaxing game to just kind of play when you're stressed.
Yeah.
So.
This sounds really good.
It looks nice.
Yeah. I mean, you're describing it, and it kind of sounds like something that would just be really good in your hands. But I specifically am kind of always looking for something that will approximate the feeling that I had. You know, either playing City of Heroes in the one and only good movement skill in that game, which was the super jumps, or playing Crackdown, which is all about doing big jumps. Also, shit, Saints Row 4 had that too. Yeah. Doing big jumps and trying to keep your momentum up. That sounds like a fine kernel to build a game around to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's on sale. It went on sale on Switch as well for probably something around $5, because I that's all I ever really invest on a random indie game when I'm just picking it up for no reason and don't know how it is. So anyway, you know, it's got a pretty low stakes, you know, low cost, you know, to try it out and see what you think of it, you know, kind of thing, you know, ratio going on. It's not like you're going to fork over $50 and then hate it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like if that sounds fun and you just want to jump around and look at a place, you don't even have to do the story if that's the part you want, you know. Mm-hmm. You're good just getting in there and jumping around and doing the open world, you know, sandbox stuff.
But I want those new suit abilities.
I know, right? So like that's what I've done a couple of upgrades, but they were like, you know, the first couple of upgrades are not super appreciably exciting. They're just like, you know, gives you extra energy or something, and it's like, okay, well that's important, but also it's not exciting yet. So I haven't gotten any of the really cool things. Like I want the new abilities. So but anyway, so that's that game. I have not played enough of it to say for sure, oh yes, totally get this game with some caveats or what. But again, like it's $2.99 on Steam right now. That's not much. So I mean, you know, if it sounds cool, give it a shot.
My curiosity has piqued.
Yeah, that's what I got. Anything else? Any other questions?
I don't have any.
Okay. Moving on.
I'll do mine because it should be relatively quick. I've got one new thing that's very small and then kind of a short, just kind of like check in on something. The new thing is that over the weekend, or on Friday rather, I needed a short game to stream. So I streamed a game called Rusty Lake Hotel.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm surprised you haven't looked at this before.
That game that I had to like leave when you were streaming because everybody went crazy and you tried to kill the pigeon, you know, you probably did. And then Greg was talking about eating a live worm. And I'm like, okay, somebody's talking about eating things that are still alive. I'm leaving. Goodbye.
I don't think any live worm eating happened in that. So I had never really played any of the Rusty Lake games or like the Cube Escape games that were associated with them. Like that was like after I, you know, really played flash games, but it's, you know, similar. It's like a room escape kind of thing. So if you've done any kind of, you know, virtual room escape kind of thing, this is going to feel very familiar to you. Kind of the conceit is that you are working at this hotel where animal people are staying, and each night you need to collect the ingredients for a meal. But the thing is, the guest is the it provides the meat, and then you solve puzzles and stuff to find two other extra ingredients, and you know that will determine like what kind of star rating you get. It wasn't as horror based as I thought it was. Like, there's definitely some like, you know, bizarre imagery and things. There are a couple of like, oh, I didn't expect that to be as gross as it is. But it's more like a very hostile European storybook about a family of animals who not only are eaten, but they are forced to eat each other. So I played this over the course of, you know, one night. It was, you know, pretty short, ended up being about like 2.5-3 hours, something like that. The puzzles are good. There are some kind of places where the interface got in the way. Either, you know, it was not clear that something could be interacted with. You collected enough items for your inventory to like spill over onto another little tab that isn't really signaled. So like there are some, you know, just kind of general UI problems. I have no idea about the rest of the series. If all of them have like the animal people conceit, I've got like one other one that I got in a sale. It's like Rusty Lake Paradise or something. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And everybody kind of reacted, not everybody, a good number of people reacted like you did, David, when I said, oh yeah, I'm going to be doing this Rusty Lake game. Like, oh yeah, Rusty Lake. I feel like I lived under a rock or something. What was your kind of experience with these, David?
So my experience with this is entirely through like watching people stream them, that sort of thing. I think mostly Rusty Lake Hotel, and then like the rest of them just trying to figure out what the hell the connection is.
Okay.
Because I guess, I don't know, not spoilers, but like the most of the rest of the games do not have animals as the characters.
Right.
So yeah, it's I don't know, it's one of those things. It's yeah, it sort of reminds me a little bit of some of the kind of the surrealist kind of almost like Twin Peaky type stuff.
It definitely ended that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd be curious about the rest of it. Like, it seems, you know, based on when you, you know, look stuff up about it, that those connections and kind of the overall like meta plot, it feels similar to something like Five Nights at Freddy's, where like it's kind of made for having a wiki made about it. You know, walking into something that is like, it's kind of like smack dab in the middle of the ones that they had made of this. I did not feel like I was necessarily lost or like I was, you know, out to sea or out to lake on it. So yeah.
Yeah. The other ones I've seen have been kind of interesting because I would say they're much more story heavy, not in terms of like, you know, actually having coherent plot, but like being things where it's like one of them I've seen some of is apparently structured around like, oh, here's a family and like showing, you know, the different generations of this family and like, you know, how people fall in love and, you know, kind of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's just really weird for a pseudo horror story. And
yeah,
it's kind of plot.
Yeah. It was good that you went away when you did Jala, because not only did I have to electrocute a pigeon lady as she was in a tub. One of the puzzle elements involved a little bird child, like a baby, and they ultimately ended up okay, but they started out in a bad situation. So,
you know, you have no right to give anybody any guff about birds ever again.
I'm not giving anybody guff about birds.
You did the other episode. You were giving people, yes, you gave Greg some heck about the birds in his vehicle.
I have no recollection.
Remember. You're like, I don't know what you're talking about. We were talking about the different types of video game vehicles and which vehicle everybody would have. And was one that was destructive. And you were like, but things living. And what about the birds?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
No, I don't know.
Did you put your nails up yet?
No, yeah, I didn't put my nails up. I'm gonna see if the bird tries building it there again. We will we will see.
Then we will take measures against them.
No, the birds left. Like the birds are gone. Yes, I forget the last check in. yeah. Oh, that's sad. I like checking in on them.
But you're putting in nails so they can't come back?
He's trying to thwart their plans to make a home at his house because he doesn't like them there, even though he likes to check on them. And so he's going to build them a place to put their nest elsewhere that is not against the house. But we were giving him quite a bit of guff about him being Elsa the Ice Princess for wanting to take away the Burbs' house.
Right. No. But I mean, to take away that one place to build a house and then provide another.
And then put another one. But that's provided but birds are weird and they may
because,
not be
out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. So any other questions about Rusty Lake Hotel?
Nope.
Are you finished with the game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I guess it's a shorter game.
Yeah, it was like a one night, like Helen to be put it at like two and a half hours, something like that.
Does the ending make any sense to you?
No, not really.
Okay.
here's a question. Are you going to be playing the other ones?
Maybe sometime in the future. It would be good when I need like a one-off kind of game for a night. So like that's probably what'll be the case.
Gotcha.
The other thing that I've been playing is a little bit more Death Stranding. And by a little bit, I mean like a couple more runs. Like, I established a route to the Midwest. It is ridiculous, like, how compressed space is in this.
Yeah,
and I know that there's like an explanation about that having to do with like perception of time and stuff. From like looking around and stuff, you know, if everybody's perception of time is different, then perception of distance will be as well. Something like that. I don't know. That's the justification that I saw. I'm continuing to really enjoy it. I am very intrigued by the story and by, you know, some of the elements that I'm seeing. There are definitely mysteries that I would like to know the answer to. And there are certainly things people are telling me that are not strictly the truth. So it'll be real cool to kind of see how that unravels and see how my own assumptions as a new player are going to be used against me as far as the story goes.
You built a road yet?
No, I have not built a road. All of my building so far has kind of come down to building like post office boxes mm-hmm. for like putting mm-hmm. lost cargo into. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it continues to be beautiful. I have, you know, still had just a good time walking and doing kind of these hiking routes, listening to podcasts. I'm very curious how it's going to, you know, change and like what the tenor of the game is going to turn into when I get like vehicles and stuff. There's still just an awful lot that is kind of unknown to me, and I want to see how it pans out. I just need to get to a place where I can dedicate more time to it. With assignment play being what
Do you have a favorite song in the game yet?
No, not yet. Okay. A lot a lot of the stuff that I heard is, you know, good, chill ambient kind of music that I would otherwise listen to, you know. I guess the band that Kojima fell in love with that he included a bunch of tracks for, Low Roar, I think is the name of it. I've added some of that stuff to my Spotify, and it's good, you know, just kind of like working around the house kind of music, but no track that sticks out for me yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Word. Yep, but I don't know that I can answer any questions about the plot or what I have seen. It's just,
don't worry. That won't change even if you beat the game.
But, you know, it's like, you know, novelty is not the be all end all. It, you know, it doesn't paper over every single problem. But, you know, it is still true, that being the case, that I've not really played anything quite like this. So I am curious to see how long that that sense of novelty and wonder can stay.
Mm.
Any questions about Death Stranding?
Nope.
Ben, let's go to you.
All right. Got a few things. So I mentioned this on the bonus episode that we did, but I finished the Last of Us Part 2 a week ago or so.
Cool.
So I think before when I talked about it, I was about halfway through the game, and so I finished the second half. It's a good game. Overall, I still like The Last of Us better. I don't understand why people are angry about this game. I can't fathom a good reason why people are angry about this game.
Discourse is hell.
Yeah, and we need to make our annual or biannual announcement that it is never okay to make death threats to people, especially over video games.
Yep. Unacceptable.
So, yeah. Especially because that's one thing I'm upset about is it's like the person who people are doing that to, I think, is one of the strongest characters in the game.
People are sending death threats to Abby?
Yeah.
Or the actress who portrays Abby?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
I believe so.
For fuck's sake, man.
I wonder why?
I mean,
other than obviously it was always dumb and there's not a good reason why, but I mean, what is the stated why? You know,
I don't think I can say it because I think part of it kind of spoils plot points of the game.
Right.
But again, it's like an argument that I don't really understand, or I don't think that you can make like a valid argument for why you would be upset about certain things that happen in the game.
Certainly not upset enough to like make somebody else's life scarier.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like also, and Greg, like obviously this wouldn't even be okay then, but at the very least, I feel like someone needs to explain the difference between like writer and voice actor.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I know.
Senseless. I mean, granted, like, it wouldn't be all right to, you know, death threat a writer either, but still, you know?
Yeah. So that's kind of like a bummer that's kind of surrounding the game, because it's definitely kind of clouding more like critical discussion about the game.
That's something that is incredibly frustrating, especially, you know, and just for all, I will speak from my perspective as somebody who believes social justice is important, and you know, people know where I stand generally on all this stuff. But like when you do get people, you know, who are, you know, just let's say 6 years ago would have been affiliated with Gamergate or whatever, would have identified with that cause. When you have, you know, regressive criticism that is kind of polluting the discourse and kind of making it so that like they, you know, they are attacking the work, it means that it makes it more difficult to critically attack the work for things that do not relate to what the to what the shitheads are complaining about, because you know the conversation is about what the shitheads are saying. So you can't come in and say like, oh, this game is too long, and oh, this game wasn't really worth the labor problems that, you know, people were having. Is the studio head, who's going out there and kind of being a shithead on social media, like, you know, you can't criticize his behavior because he's also like dealing with and, you know, under attack by these people who are like muddying up the waters. Yeah. It's just, it's,
so I'm gonna steer away from all that and just talk about the game for a little bit.
Please do. Sorry.
The cool thing about this game is they make like the game's kind of set up in like six different parts, kind of, or you could break the game in six, and it's like intro, 2-6 is a section of the game, 2-6 is another very different section of the game, and there's an epilogue that's like a sixth of the game. So just the choice of them breaking down the game the way they do, the two middle sections, that's very interesting. That's never been done before in a game of that size. So that part was very cool, I think. I think that was a really good decision. Like half of the character writing is really, really good, I think. Towards the end of the game, I was thinking about this when you were talking about the Rust Hotel or whatever. There's a lot of parts in towards the end of the game where you're put in situations where you don't want to do what the characters are doing. And so for me, that was a frustrating experience. I can understand if they're intending to do that, then I can try and like look past that. I don't know if that's why people are upset. I don't think so. I think, anyway, I don't even want to talk about that. But one part I do want to criticize a little bit is one thing I was disappointed by is, so they showed this in the second trailer that there's this like cult that they advertise as being part of the story, where it's kind of, it seems similar to like the movie The Mist or whatever, where it's like this kind of a very extreme religious cult that, you know, does horrific violence, but is very like, oh, well, we're religious, so it's okay type thing. That is an element in the game. I was a little bit disappointed by that. There's not really a payoff of that. I don't know if they're planning on doing DLC for that or something. The entire first half of the game, they do a good job of like kind of slow rolling, kind of like the deity or the leader of the group, and how they kind of idolize this single person. I don't think you ever meet the person. So this is kind of like a spoiler alert for what doesn't happen in the game. There is one video with a character that looks like the person, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't. So either I was not paying attention and I missed like any interaction with that person, or they just like don't go to it at all. So I was like really disappointed with that, because it's like the first half of the game, they build it up really well. The introduction scene to the cultist is really, really well done, I think. So like it had a great setup, but then in the latter half of the game, they're basically just like reskin versions of any other bad guy, you know? And so that was pretty disappointing from my view. I thought that had like a lot of potential, but didn't really pay off.
So they introduce this cool element and then do not provide any more answers or closure about it.
Yeah. So that part was disappointing. The part that's like strong throughout is the level design in this game is just immaculate, like all the way through. And I mentioned this like last time where it's like, oh, wow, like all these environments are beautiful. The only downside is that you kind of get bored, because that's all you're doing is it's like you go from scene where you got to kill six people in this beautifully laid out environment. And then you got to go to the next scene where you got to do the same thing over and over again. And it's just like, it's a similar problem to like Red Dead Redemption or something, where it's like, just like the game flow and the game design or whatever isn't really that good, but the world is like amazing. You know what I mean? It's just like, they couldn't find the gameplay to like show all these really cool things that they've made. It's kind of like that. Like I really wanted like some sort of thing like in Uncharted, where it's like a really big set piece, or like quick time event sounds too small, but like something like that in the game. There's not really much of that. There's definitely a good variety of sets, and the sets are really, really good. I know this is a different game, so I know it's like it might not be right to expect that sort of thing, but there's just like not enough to break up the typical action, which is just going set to set to kill zombies or people.
So it feels pretty monotonous.
And it's such a long game too. So it's like, I mean, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, take all this with a grain of salt, because it's like, it's very easy to criticize a game after it's done. It's very hard to make a game and like try and adjust the course of it as you're making it, and knowing what it's going to turn out like in the end. So it's like, it's easy to say now, like, oh, you should have cut this scene or whatever to tighten it up.
Monday morning quarterbacking, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So take all this with a grain of salt, but it definitely feels like if you were to make a second pass of it, you could have definitely tightened up a lot of the middle elements of the game and maybe focus more on like differentiating gameplay than mm-hmm. what you're doing, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really hard to, I don't know, it's just a real like strange mix of emotions, you know, because parts of this game are great and better than any other game that's out there. And then parts of this are kind of like boring or frustrating or monotonous, you know? I don't know. I mean, the plus side is they were trying to do stuff. They're trying to do a lot of things very different in the game, and all of that is appreciable. I don't know. I hope they kind of go back to like Uncharted Lost Legacy, where it's like just making really solid like 8 to 10 hour experiences. If they do that for the rest of their like studio development, I will buy and play and love each one of those games, you know? I'm trying to think if I have anything else to say. It's kind of hard. You can't really talk too in depth about it without getting into the story points. So just kind of keeping it vague. It's definitely a game that breaks new grounds in a couple different ways. Maybe we can do a spoiler cast about this at some point in time, and we can kind of delve more into it. So I'm glad it exists. I think it's good. I mean, if you at all like the first one, I think it's worth your time to play. I mean, just maybe space it out, I guess, so it doesn't get so monotonous, if that's a problem for you. I don't know what else to say about it besides that.
Yeah, no, you answered my question. You know, I was going to ask, you know, how much variety is brought in with the enemy just enemy party composition, let's say.
I referenced it last week where they try and do like three things instead of two, where it's like they have monsters, this military force, and then this cult force. But the military and the cult force are pretty similar to one another, differentiating in just skins and weapons used pretty much. And so so basically it's still like a two-party system. But it's still, I mean, it's cool. The art is amazing throughout the game. Mm-hmm. It's the best depiction of Seattle I've seen in a game, but that's like a small field of the games.
Cool.
But rather, you could say it's like the best depiction of like a city in a game. I guess, and then comparing it to Last of Us 1, and it's weird because it's like nobody complained about the first game, and that had like controversial character decisions in it. Like, we can go back and spoil that game since it's way too old. But like Joel at the end of the first game, like murdering a hospital full of people because he can't get over the death of his daughter. That's like, I mean, you know, that makes the character that you've played this entire game and like turning him, making him do something horrible. You know, it's like there's like no outrage over that at all. You know,
there's a little bit of outrage. There was like simultaneously people who said, I do not like being forced to do this. I do not feel like this follows at all. Yeah. There were also people who said, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, just he is a hard man making hard decisions, you know, under hard circumstances. And then there are also people who are like, yeah, they never made Joel look like a good person, so this lines up. Like,
yeah,
Joel's not a good guy at all. And people who look at him and say, yes, he's doing the right thing. I think are the same people who think Walter White is the good guy of that show.
Sociopaths. It's a good comparison.
I don't know about sociopaths, but it's a thing that happens commonly in media. See also, people who idolize Tyler Durden. Yeah.
I do want to compliment the combat in this game. I think it's strong throughout. Like it's, they do such a good job of like, you're never at a place where you're completely boned and like, there's no way out. You know, you always like have options. It's always good about giving you enough ammo or enough tools to be able to do something.
Yep.
So I think that entire system is really, really well designed because there's like a lot of different avenues for how you can create something to murder the person that's around you. So that's great. The settings are all like really, really beautiful. So it's mechanically, it's like it's a really, really good game. The one thing I was thinking of is like thinking of like The Last of Us One, like the set piece of like the tank in like Pittsburgh, how that was like a big like game changer or whatever as you're playing the game. Like there's nothing like that in the game. So I think that's kind of like one part where they kind of took a step back. Anyway. I think I've kind of ran around and said everything I can say about the game for now. So any other final questions about it? All right. I have, two more things I'll talk about then that are kind of tinier. So kind of in the wake of Steam sale, I got one small puzzle game, and then I got one small puzzle demo that I wanted to talk about because they're both really good.
Okay.
The first one's a demo. It's a game called Patrick's Parabox, It's a Sokoban game where you're shifting around blocks, but the interesting mechanic is the blocks can sometimes be rooms that you can either scale down into, or you might start out in a room that you can scale up out of, if that makes sense. So if you move out of the room you're in, the room becomes a single block in a larger world. Which you are now the equal size of. And then likewise, if you go into a smaller block, then you are shrunk down and then that is a new level that you are in. It's a short demo. It's only like 15 or 20 minutes, but kind of similar to how The Last of Us has like almost like too much content and they might need to tone it down. This game is a very good start at a demo, but it needs to fill out more content and add like more mechanics. But so far it is really, really good puzzles. Even the design so far is really good as far as like how the puzzles scale up. The cool part of the mechanic is it starts adding things where it starts adding recursiveness, where the box that you are in also has a box of that puzzle box. It's great. It's really, really great. So depending upon where you push it, you might not be able to get out of the exit in that anymore. And okay. It's really good. And then when you exit it or whatever, instead of it following you out, it just shows you enter from where you're entering in, if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's just watch a video of like the game or something.
I'm looking at, so the Steam page has not only good videos, but also like GIFs of what's happening here.
Okay.
Wow.
Again, it's called Patrick's Parabox.
Yeah. This seems like a real step up from Steven's Sausage Roll.
they're different. They're going for different things. This one is not trying to be painful. So.
Are you sure of that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. strong recommendation. Hopefully that game, or that's just maybe a game to watch. It'll probably come out like in a year or two or so.
It's like, it's being recommended alongside like Baba Is You. It looks like it's in a similar vein to that. And it's the demo because it's not out yet. Like this is them. Yeah. Oh, it's part of the festival. Yeah. Little festival demos that they've got.
Yeah. It was like an indie game festival.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then one last thing I want to talk about is a puzzle game that is finished and out on Steam. It's a game called Mushroom 11. It came out like maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, I think. The premise of this game, it's another puzzle game. But the premise is you have this like weird, like nuclear green slime blob. And the mechanic is you have an eraser, like kind of like in MS Paint or whatever, where if you click it, it erases everything in a circle of where you're clicking.
Okay.
And the premise of this is as you're erasing this blob, it'll grow like a Swamp Thing or something like that. It'll regenerate itself back to a set size.
Okay.
And so all of the puzzle mechanics are based off of that. So for example, if you have this like vertical wall with a couple of like cracks in it, what you can do is you can destroy the little green blob so it goes up along the wall, and then it'll regenerate into the cracks and then have like a foothold. And then you can erase it so it like climbs all the way up. It's like a physics-based game, but with this very unique mechanic of like destroying things and regenerating things or whatever.
It looks weirdly similar to like, I could see this almost being like a bonus mode in World of Goo or something like that.
Yeah. And I feel like this might've been like a flash game before it was a full fledged game. I don't know how long it's been around. But I bought like a handful of games for the Steam summer sale, and this was the one that was my favorite so far. It's not like over the moon 5-star game or anything like that, but it's like a pretty good, like 3 to 4-star game.
This is another one that I would recommend people look up video of.
Yeah. It's called Mushroom 11 again.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got so far. A couple of puzzle games and then a giant game that is too big to talk about.
I don't have any other questions about these. I'm curious specifically about the Parabox one. I know that'll be like Baba Is You, where I will like get that and enjoy the first third of it, and that is all that I will be able to do, and I'll feel fine about it.
I think you'll be able to make it to the end. I think it's the first third of the game, you know, so it's like it's doable all the way through. They just need to add the really mind-bending stuff after this now.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been doing a couple of things. Been continuing on with Dead Rising 4. Overall, that continues to just be like an extremely stupid game about fighting zombies. Although I do think it has one of my favorite lines for a very long time, just because it perfectly sums up the main character. So you eventually meet these a boyfriend and girlfriend pair that run a like conspiracy theory podcast, and who are kind of inspired by, you know, your efforts as a journalist. I mean, basically like annoying fans.
Okay.
And eventually the boyfriend gets like kidnapped by the government, and the girlfriend comes to you and says, "Oh, will you rescue him?" And your character's response is, "Probably, but not on purpose." Which that's basically summarizes the character. It's like, you're the hero, just not on purpose.
Right.
So that's really all I've gained from that game. Like, it's like I said, it's a very dumb game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at no point was the series serious.
Exactly.
Serious.
But is it fun?
It definitely is fun. Fighting through a early times restaurant where everyone has like taken up medieval arms and armor to fight both you and the zombies is pretty worthwhile.
Okay.
So other than that, I've been continuing on No Man's Sky. The game has inexplicably become a combination of like a management sim where I'm basically running a network of intergalactic freighters running around doing different missions, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the highlights of that, although I've not personally experienced it, is all of the places you send your frigates to do like missions are actual, randomly generated, star systems within the game. So if you go there, you'll actually see your ships.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. Apparently, there's like no real meaningful way to interact with them, but it is just kind of neat. Like, overall, this is a game I'm enjoying a lot. I really like. I'll say a lot of good things about it. It also, there is a number of things where you experience them, and it's like, oh, this is like a very clear sign of, you know, some of the really cool, you know, ambition they had that never went anywhere.
Yeah. Even now at this late day with all of the additional content that they put
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. There's also some similar weird things with that because, like, the multiplayer, at least some of it, like, weekly multiplayer, you know, they'll have, like, every weekend a shared mission that, you know, everyone gets, and,
okay,
you know, it's kind of a preset planet, so it's this weird thing where you're, it's kind of hard to explain. It's this weird thing where it's simultaneously is a set piece in that, like, you know, they're, you know, sending everyone to the same place, that sort of thing, except that it follows all of the same rules as the rest of the game. So, like, if someone, you know, builds a base at some point on that planet, like, there'll be a base there that, you know, everyone's yeah. tromping through and, you know, using the landing pads and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
How many people there are, like, on screen at once? Is it, like, hundreds?
Not hundreds, and I don't know if they do any sort of, like, instancing or stuff like that. I'd say I've had yeah. probably five has been the most of it. Most notably, okay. it ended up with this large-scale battle against the Sentinels. And so it ended up being, like, me with really, really crappy equipment and then people running around with, like, maxed-out machine guns and other people just, like, doing strafing runs with their starship.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's very much, again, you know, it's one of those things where almost everything in this game is some degree of janky, but most of the time mm-hmm. it's, you know, unique enough and interesting enough and stuff like that to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's kind of funny is, in addition to it somehow becoming a management sim, it's also somehow become kind of a simplified, I guess, like Factorio or whatever.
Okay.
In that a significant portion of my game now is setting up my base to basically grow all the raw materials I need to mass produce end game trading items and raise as much money as possible so that I can afford the end game gear.
That sounds like the thing that I would be most engaged with. Like, dogfights are cool, but I do not want to wander around crazy landscapes and skyscapes. I want to optimize.
Yeah. And it, at least for me, like, it feels like it does a really good job of, you know, kind of having that learning curve where, you know, there is explicitly, like, the point where, say, like, I don't know, finding a copper deposit in order to get the materials I need was, like, a major endeavor.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that was, like, would be the, you know, an entire play session would revolve around, like, me needing to get the basic materials I need to craft, like, some batteries or something.
Mm.
And now it's the point where it's, like, a combination of half this stuff I can just, it's more efficient for me to buy than it is to actually, you know, go get it. And the other half I can just, you know, there's extensive system of, you know, if you don't have something, but you have the molecules that make it up, you can, you know, split apart those molecules and, you know, recombine them into whatever chemical formula you need type of thing.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know, just yeah, long story short, I'm really enjoying it. There's still some really weird and really interesting stuff they're doing with the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's some sort of weird thing where you eventually have to recruit a series of NPCs that are like, one of them's a farmer, one of them's a merchant, one of them's a weapon crafter, that sort of thing for your base.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really weird because, even after you recruit one of them, when you're recruiting them, they'll basically spawn one version of that character at each base you find.
Okay.
And so you can just choose like how you want them to look or whatever that way. But even after you recruit them, they'll still show up there. And eventually you find out that like that's actually in world. Is that like, why the character says like, oh yeah, if you fire me, you'll just end up hiring someone else that
looks exactly like me.
Yeah, looks exactly like me and has the same memories that I do.
Oh, that's a fun little zero laziness. Escape.
Yeah, twist. And there's a lot of things like that. Like all the people you meet, you are basically at some point informed that, don't worry, you don't need to handle anything. Everything's been paid for, 10 years from now. That sort of thing. There's a lot of weird stuff going around. Also, some of the factions turn out to be a little bit more interesting. So,
when you understand what they're saying.
Yeah, once you can actually figure out what they're saying, for example, the Klingon like faction that's basically going around making war everywhere, apparently their whole belief system is that no one else ultimately in order to bring peace to the galaxy, they need to like eliminate anyone else that uses weapons. And then once that happens, like the final, person to be eliminated by weapons will be themselves. So they're some sort of weird, like, Pax Roma combined with like Death Cult.
Okay.
So I guess the message just be like, there's some really weird shit going on in the game. In addition to all of the like, what if Star Trek except janky game?
Yeah. I hope we get to a point where we can stop holding jank against games. I don't think you're doing that.
Oh, I don't hold it against them. Yeah. I just recognize that's reality.
Yeah. No. I was not accusing you of doing that, but like I don't know. I have come to the point in my life where I find jank very charming as long as it doesn't make me redo things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Or if it does make you redo things, at least make it in world that you're redoing them.
Yeah.
I think I'm still anti-jank, so we can have that fight, Cole.
It's fine. There's plenty of janky and non-janky games to go around. This town is big enough for the two of us.
until the jank start, causes part of it to, res out, and then it's only half as big.
Right. Yeah.
So, other than that, thanks to your gift, I've started playing Hitman 2.
It's really good.
Let me
ask this question. Do you think the game is really good, David?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do. I have only played the first level, to be fair. Although I did get Silent Assassin on it, so I suppose that's something, even though it's actually pretty easy to do.
Which which first level are you talking about? The tutorial on the fake boat, or are you talking about the New Zealand mansion?
The New Zealand mansion.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So does it? Yeah, that's something that I still don't understand, because like the tutorial on the fake boat, which is maybe my favorite Hitman level of all time, just because of how meta it is.
Yeah.
That was in the previous game, was it?
Yeah, they took the Hitman 2016's tutorial and brought it forward.
I think that's what I'm about to get dropped into. Yeah.
What, you're about to get dropped into what? I'm sorry.
So it so I've only played the one mission, but afterwards it said like, all right, now it's going to have me do the tutorial missions or whatever. So I'm guessing maybe that's what I'll be seeing next.
Yeah. Okay. So you do the, so I'm confused. You do the fake boat, you do the airplane hangar, as like, it's a two part tutorial. And then on Hitman 2, the New Zealand mansion, you know, when, like when the storm is rolling in, that's like another kind of tutorial level that like introduces some of the new elements in Hitman 2's engine.
Okay. And this is one where it's like the start of the mission, you're just doing reconnaissance.
Yeah, it's like where you get off a boat on the beach and make your way up. Yeah. After that, you go to Miami.
They've turned it into Far Cry, where you have to like walk around the base and like flag things, and then you go kill people.
You're not necessarily flagging things, but like you're still kind of being talked through. Like, hey, walk around the house and see if you can find and disable some cameras. Stuff like
that. Okay. you're technically unflagging things. So good. It's a this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler for our multiplayer, but I'm really interested to see sometime. I want to see someone do a retrospective of like the different way Agent 47 has been characterized throughout the games.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yo, he really seems to swing somewhat oddly between, like, have we decided, is he a, you know, sociopath or just kind of an anti-hero?
I think he's whatever is the most fun at the moment.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was disappointed, though. I did not get the chance to use the katana or the throwing stars in the first level.
That's why you can go back and replay. It's all in the replay, yeah. Man. Yeah.
So, and this is, I don't know, this is maybe a little too mechanics-y talk, but do you know, does it negatively affect your rating if you kill someone and someone witnesses them being killed, but does not witness you doing it? So like if you say snipe someone.
I think that will get in the way of you getting silent assassin. Are you talking about killing a target, or are you talking about killing somebody on the way to the target?
A target.
Okay. Yeah. If you kill anybody about the target, you're going to get dinged. I think you do take a small ding if somebody discovers a body, but it is not as big of a ding as if you got caught yourself.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I'll be curious to hear more when you get into the more substantial levels. The Miami level in Hitman 2 is something to behold. It is a ridiculously good level. So
nice. Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Is this first mission level, is that actually one that like they do multiplayer, or you know what I mean? The multiplayer type stuff in, because that's a very small level.
You know, I haven't checked. I don't know if you can do like a contracts where people set up their own goals for it. I would be surprised if it wasn't, but we will find out. Cool. Anything else?
So that's basically all I got.
Sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what did you ask the nice people?
I asked, what's your favorite character growth arc? And this can be a physical evolution, like boss transformations or internal character growth, either in characterization of the, you know, person themselves or just in their stats or whatever, abilities and so on.
Yeah. The graphic that you shared is making me weirdly nostalgic. I have never engaged with Digimon and Digivolutions, you know, in the form that most people would recognize. But this looks almost exactly like the charts that you would go and print out when you were trying to figure out how to make, like, how to evolve your virtual pet Digimon. Like the little keychain, the Tamagotchi for boys. So like almost exactly this. So now I'm nostalgic.
Well, this question came up because I was talking to Mai in the Slack about, you know, personal evolutions. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of going through my own personal, you know, Jolivolution right now. Mm-hmm. And then everybody was like talking about, you know, Jellychon turns into Jellakuma, turns into... You know, and then like the ultimate form, I think, was Metal Jellychon or something. But anyway, so that was a thing that was going on in the chat. And it was in, you know, like, hey, let's talk about that. That's something we haven't asked before.
Why not? So, so we have a lot of responses here. So I'm going to carry us through here pretty sprightly. We have Roop, who says Gabriel Knight from a lonely chauvinist man's man to a man who might want to settle down and have a family. God, I wish that story had any resolution to it. Yeah, part three ends on a cliffhanger, and it's a bummer. Oh, well. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, okay, I'm going to go for an easy one, because it's all I can think about at the moment. Your progression in an Elder Scrolls game. You go from being a prisoner at the start of the game to a living god at the end. And the character progression as you slowly gain power is really well done and satisfying with difficult fights all through the game.
Yeah.
I'm kind of disappointed that you don't start out as like a junior Skrull and progress to being an Elder Skrull.
Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says Kratos. He's a selfish loner merchant, murder merchant. And then he becomes a dad who is a bit of a loner murder merchant.
Yeah. You know, he was a dad at the start. He was a dad. He was a very, very bad dad. And then he went and, you know, backpacked around Mount Olympus for a while. And then he became, well, I haven't played it, but I assume.
Bearded dad.
Yeah. Became a bearded dad. Mm-hmm. Jala, what does Devin say?
Your personal growth as Shepard in the Mass Effect trilogy.
Yeah. It happens over three games. You get invested. Martinus, says, I love the character progression of Jason Brody in Far Cry 3. Starting out helpless and scared and useless, then transforming into a ruthless mass murderer that even his friends can't stomach. Hey, David, is Jason the protagonist or the antagonist?
The protagonist.
Dealer's choice.
Yeah. So I would actually, for similar reasons, you know, stand by my maybe unpopular opinion that Far Cry 3 actually has a pretty great story for this exact reason.
Yeah.
It's just a story of a, you know, it's basically someone finds the thing they're finally good at and learns that it's maybe not that great of a thing to begin with.
It's, well, that's weirdly the moral of Gross Point Blank.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I love that movie. Let's see here.
I only learned my lessons through John Cusack, please.
Yes. He's not a really good follow on Twitter. I thought I saw him posting some good stuff, but he's got boomer brain, unfortunately. Let's see. David, what does Jack say?
Jack, aka Chicken Wriggles, says, I enjoyed the hell out of both versions of Nemesis's progression in RE3 and RE3 Make. The final boss fights both were very gross and for different reasons. I think both Blobosises and the huge, I don't know, Gundam that Nemesis becomes in the remake have a soft spot reserved in my heart.
Yeah.
Stars.
Stars. Yeah. I have a little bit of a softer spot in my heart for the original Nemesis, because just he is, all of his changes are really a result of things that you do over the course of the game. Whereas it's a little bit more indirect in the new one, but they're both good. Yeah. Ben, what does Dan say?
Dan says Marcus and Detroit become human. It's really fascinating to see him progress from a caring, order-driven droid to realizing his own humanity and the treatment of his kind by the human race. It deals with a lot of tricky concepts and considerations, and the great thing with the game is that you can play out however you want. My playthrough was for him to show compassion and lead by example, sometimes at the cost, but holistically demonstrating the complex feelings and importance of droids as a race, just like everyone else.
Hmm. Does that ring true for you, having played that game, Ben?
I mean, I think I would say that the only difference is it's like basically two paths you can pick with them. But yeah.
Nice.
That is the light side path. Yes.
Jala, what does Lucas say?
Lucas says, Arthur Morgan in Red Dead Redemption 2 has one of the most effectively told character arcs in games. The voice work really sells his tragic decline, especially if you play him as an honorable outlaw. If you meander like the game wants you to, and pick up on all the side conversations, you really see Arthur grow from being a go-with-the-flow type who never interrogates his upbringing with the Vanderlind gang, to an older, wiser outlaw who recognizes that his years of thieving have made the world a worse place. Communicating the ways in which this character's writing succeeds would take paragraphs, so I recommend anyone to check out Noah Gervais' video on cowboy games. Red Dead Redemption 2 is a deeply flawed game, but Arthur is an unmitigated good part of the experience.
That's the best sales pitch for RDR2 that I've seen, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is the strong point of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to get through the gameplay to get to those things.
And there's so much of it. Oh, my God. Nice. John writes, immersive sims in general for player character progression, but shout out to Prey 2017, where you start underpowered with horror game vibes, and by the end, you can have either freaky alien powers yourself or basically be a superhero. Yeah, that's necessary, though, because that game gets ridiculous in its back third as regards difficulty. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Callum say?
Callum says, this is something I think the Infamous series did really well. You start out slightly superpowered, shooting bolts of electricity, and then in sending lightning tornadoes down the street.
I can picture a lightning tornado in a video game, but I had a flash of what one might be in real life, and I got very upset.
Was the use of the word flash, like, intentional there?
No, it wasn't okay. Intentional. It was accident. Okay. If it was intentional, I would have leaned into it way too hard and made everybody
this
hate me.
This is true.
Yes.
Yes.
I also feel like if you're going particularly with, what's his name, Cole from the first game, he also has some of the most bizarre and, I guess, interesting character progression of any game.
And that's the game that, like, that inspired the notion of morality in games being either save the puppy or eat the puppy.
Well, there's that, and that never actually, well, that never gets better. It just gets more over the top.
Yeah.
In that, like, eventually it's like, save the, I don't know, little kids or save your girlfriend.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you put
but no, I mean, I think my favorite is just, and this is blatantly a spoiler, but I feel like Statue of Limitations is passed.
Yeah, that there hasn't been a new entry in that series for like 5 years, so.
Yeah, so basically the end of the game is that the final boss is evil you from another dimension.
Weird.
Huh. So, I mean, if that's technically character progression.
let's see here. Ben, what does David say?
David said, Ludwig's forms in Bloodborne. Legit jaw dropped when he pulled the Moonlight Greatsword out. I have no idea what that means, but I'll accept it. For a more internal progression, a recent example is Control. Jesse starts out as a semi-unwilling participant, just wanting to find her brother. By the end, she has taken the bull by the horns and is fully in control of both herself and the situation around her.
Hmm. Yeah. God, I need to play more of that game. Anyway.
Funny. Very funny.
Jala, what does Tim say?
Tim says, for a physical progression, I remember having a lot of fun leveling up the agent in Crackdown and jumping to ridiculous heights and launching cars all over the city.
That is a very good answer and might be mine if I didn't already have one thrown in. Yeah. And I will round us out here with Rookie, who has a little bit of a longer one, saying Prince Arthas starts Warcraft 3 as a generic paladin prince and proceeds to make some questionable decisions as you level him up to a max level paladin in the human campaign. Then he gets turned into an undead and becomes the protagonist of that campaign, where you get to level him up to max as a Death Knight, a powerful flunky of the Lich King. In the Warcraft 3 expansion, he starts to lose his power due to some nonsense I can't remember. Sounds like Warcraft to me. So he loses levels throughout the campaign, eventually meeting the Lich King when he's down to level 1 and taking his place, controlling all the mindless undead in the world. He next shows up in WoW, where he is behind-the-scenes villain for large chunks of the story until his expansion comes out. In Wrath of the Lich King, he constantly shows up throughout the main story and wrecks shop everywhere he goes. Eventually, you and 24 of your closest friends kill him in a very satisfying fight, but you learn that all this time he has been holding back the mindless undead horde from overrunning the world.
Classic Lich King move.
Yep. Oh, boy. Yeah. Turns out you goofed. Shouldn't have killed him. I'll do my answer very briefly. In the Assassin's Creed 2 arc. With Ezio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Over the course of, you know, 3 games, going from being just a spoiled, impetuous, you know, Italian nobility, just, you know, piece of shit, to suffering a tragic loss and working within the order and then leading the order and then eventually making some really tough decisions about the future of the order. It's really good. And it is sold by some amazing voice performances. I think still stand out. Yeah, that's mine. Let's see here. David, how about you?
This one I think's a lot of fun, just because there's so many different ways to look at it. First off, I think we can all agree that the worst character progression of any game was definitely the prince from Prince of Persia.
Just across that whole series, where he goes from being just kind of a brat to being a, you know, to being an emo.
Yeah, exactly.
If you press the button, he goes from being emo to being a brat.
Oh,
wow!
I appreciate that.
I did too. I laughed.
So I think my actual answer is probably Agent 47, which I kind of alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
Just for, like I said, interesting characterizations. Although some other ones I'd like to throw out real quickly is the boss from Saints Row.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I want to know, can we consider... Is the Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter feed technically the Sonic the Hedgehog character? In which case, Sonic went from being like the personification of, you know, immature brat to like actually one of the more reasonable voices on Twitter.
It's a brand. It's a brand, David.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying. Does that brand constitute the character?
Yes. Yeah. The guy who I assume he identifies as male. But the person behind that account has actually like stepped down. They've moved on to another job. So it is not the same person. I do not know what the editorial direction for the Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter account's going to be. Sorry. Sometimes Why you forget not? It's 2020. So, yes, I would say that is an answer.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Ben, how about you?
This one's going to be biased by what I just played, but I'll say Abby in The Last of Us 2. I really like the character progression, not necessarily of her, but how their story is told.
Cool. So, cool.
Yeah.
You do not endorse her activities.
Some of them are good. No. Okay, okay, yeah, yeah.
I have no idea what it is, but I just know people are angry about her. So, yeah. Jala, how about you?
So, honestly, the one that has given me the most glee that I can recall is leveling up Aleph in the original Shining Force. So in that game, you advance 10 levels in your class, and then you can promote to an advanced class, which starts off initially weaker, but then powers up from there. So when you get Aleph, who is a mage, and therefore really, really squishy, dies in one hit, it's after most of your party is promoted and a few levels deep, and she is level 1 unpromoted, so like completely, you know, fresh recruit.
Yeah.
And you have to grind her up to promotion, but the most satisfying thing is having her in the final battle against Dark Dragon and then unleashing Bolt level 2, which has this huge damage radius and is completely devastating because your other mages have fire and ice and they don't have that kind of AoE. Mm-hmm. The only character that gets that Bolt level 2 is Aleph, so you have to level her up.
Right.
But boy, is that fun when you're just like, and another one gets hit, and then here's another one getting hit. And especially like if your other people have already damaged them, and then it's just like dead, 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 dead. And then like all of them just die off the screen because she just used Bolt, and it's like, yes, nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
You have DJ Khaled on them. Another one.
Oh, yep. Man, that's that sounds like a pretty classic kind of Magikarp situation.
Yeah. Well, there are several characters that are very strong, but they start at such a very low level compared to where the rest of your party is that you have to baby them and like, you know, grind them up to get them to the level. And depending upon what their class is, some of them are easier and some of them are harder. Mm-hmm. Like you get a baby dragon and a cyborg and then like a healer that has a gigantic range healing spell that does a bunch of stuff that you get at the same time as Aleph. His name is Hirasu. Mm-hmm. And like all of those characters end up being really good if you can just level them up high enough.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
Yep.
Nice. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. And it's weirdly making me wish that I could play a couple of these games right now. Yeah. If you would like to participate in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Mondays. Thank you very much, Jal, for putting it up today.
Yahoo!
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are exciting to us in the world of video games. Jala, what is going on with the video game pricing?
Yeah, so the last time that we had a real price increase for AAA games was in 2005, when the cost jumped from $49.99 to $59.99, but now 2K has increased the price on NBA 2K21 to $69.99 for the PS5 or the Xbox Series X. Adjusting for inflation, the cost of a $59.99 game in 2005 should have risen to $77.84 by this point anyway, adjusting for the inflation. So this is not like a big surprise. I'm actually surprised they didn't raise the price sooner than that. The main concern that a lot of people have is that there is no talk whatsoever of reducing the use of microtransactions, right. Despite the release trailer for NBA 2K20 last year having comparisons to casino or pachinko games with how much it emphasized those microtransactions.
Oh my God.
However, production costs have risen, but so is the degree of risk involved because third parties have died or been absorbed by larger companies when they're trying to reach that quality bar, or publishers are overextending by banking on major franchises only for them to just not catch on, and then that publisher just vanishes. Sales do happen, though, and price drops happen pretty quickly, even on fairly new games for a lot of times. And also there's indie games around that are of a definitely lower price point. So I don't think that this is going to really cause that much upset for most people. I mean, $10 difference is not too big of a deal, especially since we've been writing out the same cost for these games for years and years now. So, but it is a thing that is occurring. And once one publisher does it, another one will. And then you'll see those spikes in prices probably coming up. So I never really buy games when they're new. I usually wait for sales on most things. So it's extremely rare for me to even have to worry about that because I'm always waiting for a sale. By the time I get to a game anyway, after I buy it, like, I never buy it and play it right away. Are you kidding me? Like, that never happens. I put it in my backlog. I download it, stare at it. And then I'm like, oh, hey, what's this other game that I downloaded 2 years ago? You know? So like, I'm not worried about it personally. But
yeah, I wrote a big Twitter thread about this, kind of talking about why this was up and coming, you know, why we shouldn't be surprised. It was in relation to, you know, discussions about labor practices at The Last of Us or at Naughty Dog during the production of The Last of Us 2. And just saying like, yeah, you know, something has to give, you know, we cannot continue to exploit employees in order to, you know, do a crunch and keep costs down, et cetera, et cetera. I think that the evil that this is revealing is that even though, you know, effectively games are costing less and less, in general, the purchasing power that most of us have has not actually gotten better and in fact has gotten worse since 2005. So like this still stings and, you know, puts more of an underline on what you said, Jalo, which is that day one, you know, basically you are paying a premium to get it on a day one. And, you know, if you want to spend less money, then it takes time. And then it's like, okay, is that necessarily the best for everybody? You know?
Yeah.
I feel like also it's worth considering, like, this is late stage capitalism. There is no scenario where the price increase results in the developers being treated better or paid more.
No, it's a ratchet. That crank only turns one way, regrettably. This should not surprise anybody.
I feel like, though, I don't know, it seems like most of the, like, I'm not even, like, I'm someone who tends to dislike indie games, and I'd still say, like, most of the good games, you're probably going to buy, like, you know, fairly cheap early access on Steam or something.
Yeah. The other thing to factor in is something like Games Pass as well.
There
are going to be other stories that relate to this in the future. I'll keep an eye out and bring those. My story, it's very short. Somebody put guns in Dark Souls 3.
I'm pretty sure I played that game.
No, that was Bloodborne was what you played.
True.
No. No. This is a mod that looks very fun. I think it would be very fun to stream this. What it does is it replaces some of the ranged weapons, specifically any of the crossbows, all the way up to, you know, the fancy crossbows that shoot multiple bolts, etc. Replaces them with just like modern ass guns modeled after Resident Evil weapons.
Just want my assault rifle to be called like the Pumperump.
Oh yeah, the pickle pea. Yeah, those are birds that you trade stuff to. I'm really curious because this looks dumb as fuck, and also like it would be very, very fun. But yeah, it's just a mod that you can download on Nexus. You have to use the mod engine. You can't play it online. People who listened up on Fireside Chat will know that we have been very heavy into mods recently. Kind of since the turn of the year or so. So yeah, I'm going to throw this one on the pile along with the Dark Souls roguelike one and the Fog Gate randomizer. Yeah. Cool stuff. Love the Souls mod scene. I have nothing else to say about guns and Dark Souls.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see here. David, what's going on with... what's the scandal with NBA Jam? And be careful, because I like NBA Jam quite a bit.
Yeah, so I know virtually nothing about NBA Jam, so this is going to be like me repeating a story that I have no firsthand knowledge of. But apparently, this was a 2-on-2 basketball game, and it came out at a time when the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons had a rivalry going on.
I mean, if you want to call it a rivalry, when the Bulls were the Bulls and the Pistons were the Pistons. Come on, man.
Apparently, those are things that are words that make sense in that order.
It was the early 90s. I think NBA Jam came out in 1993. Michael Jordan was on the ascendancy. This was before the 95 season when they did like a three-peat. Or it might have been at the very, very early part of the three-peat.
Yeah, so, and... also relevant is that the developer or the development team was based in for this game was based in Chicago. However, the one of the developers on the team was apparently a Pistons fan. So he added some code into the game where if you're playing the Bulls versus the Pistons, and you get down to, like, you know, the super dramatic, like, you know, right at the buzzer shot to win the game, it will automatically make the Bulls miss the shot.
Wow. Fucking filthy. We're just now learning about this?
Yep.
Huh.
I guess they did not do code reviews there.
Yeah. Wow. I was mistaken. NBA Jam, I believe, came out during the three-peat before Jordan retired and then came back. Yes. Huh. Yeah, that's that is very interesting. I like that this is okay. It's on now. Oh, this is on the Chicago Tribune. Wow.
Yep.
Scandal. Huh. Man, I need to fire up some NBA Jam. That's a fun game.
Yeah, my favorite was just what was the one that it was like theoretically simulating like street basketball, but then you had like superpowers and stuff.
You're thinking of NBA Street. Those were also fun. That was kind of like a spiritual successor to Jam.
Yeah, I remember that being pretty awesome.
I never played it. You know what? I never played as the Bulls in NBA Jam because I was always the youngest person. People always took them. So I went with the Magic so I could play as Shaq.
Oh,
yeah. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about 90s basketball, which is literally one of only three sports that I know. let's see here. Ben, what's happening with Harry Potter?
Yeah, there were a bunch of bummers of stories this last week, so I tried to pick a happy one.
I can make a story about Harry Potter into a bummer if you want.
Well, yeah. We're gonna stick to Harry Potter in terms of video games only.
Okay, yes.
So I believe this was announced like a couple weeks ago or that they're going to make a Harry Potter game. This is just saying that, confirming that it's still on track to be released in 2021. Mm-hmm. The interesting part is that, like, apparently Warner Brothers, the publisher that's making it, hasn't confirmed that they're making the game, even though I thought this was semi-announced. So, whatever. I don't know. Still looks cool. And I guess the other part, too, is, like, the leaked footage from, like, 2 years ago is from this game. So, that's not going to be a Rocksteady game. That is this game. So, that's
no. Fine. The Rocksteady rumor... Oh, good.
I was just gonna say, I feel like the most important thing to the ultimate success of this game is that it has absolutely nothing to do with the actual Harry Potter plot line.
No, if you're just a wizard in a completely unrelated part of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like I feel like that's where every like adaptation to game falls down is like, no, I don't want to just, like, have a third-rate, like, retelling of the story that already was pretty cool.
We've already had games about those. Like, that's fine. Exactly. We're free. We don't have to... We can just use the cool stuff about this world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think the thing that would make this good is if they added a, I mean, good, whatever. I would like for them to add a gender slider and let you select your character's pronouns because fuck J.K. Rowling. Sorry, I didn't mean to take it in there. sorry, Ben. I didn't mean to make a bummer out of your thing. Was it the rumor that Rocksteady was working on this?
It was speculated when the footage was leaked, like 2 years ago. It's the same engine.
Have you seen the rumor that Rocksteady has instead been working on a Suicide Squad game?
I have not.
Yeah, that's the last one that I heard.
What is Rocksteady made? I'm horrible with remembering
this. All the Batman games and Urban Chaos. Yes,
that's what I thought. Yeah, I'm really now hoping this is a Batman-style brawler in the Harry Potter universe. Like,
dude, that would be awesome.
If I could just like break
Dobby's knees. A crowd of children?
Yeah, if I can break Dobby's knees, that is a day one purchase.
Just snap him over your knee like Bane. Well, we will see 2021. How do y'all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttons.
Thank you everybody for listening to level number 335. We appreciate you taking the time. I don't know of any like calls to action to do besides the normal ones, Apple Podcast reviews, telling your friends, Patreon. All of those particular things, we're going to get the audio from Duckfest all bundled up. It's really just been a matter of me getting out from under Tactics Ogre, which should hopefully happen this week sometime. but we'll make an announcement on all the usual places. Is there anything important I'm forgetting?
No.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been David Meismith on Duckfest.
Dalachan persists in places.
I've been Ben Merkel, and you can follow Dennis at Deck of Wonders, all underscores.
Yes, you
somewhere.
Can. He has been super. He's been super busy with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
I got two.
Okay.
First one is BioShack, but of course Shack is SHAQ.
Okay.
Yeah, that's and the other one the is one I had.
Okay.
The other one is Never Gets Better. That was a Davidism.
I love that.
Wait, Never Gets what?
Better.
Instead of Never Gets Worse.
You know that thing that you said?
And then I don't listen to the things I said. I don't have time to explain why I don't have time to understand.
Let's see here. Ben, what do you have?
I just have one. He hunts Jakes.
Okay. Let's see. David, what did you have besides BioShack?
That's all I had.
Okay, I have That Is an Answer. BioShack gets it by votes. I am very partial to BioShack.
Let's do BioShack. It is Destiny.
It is Destiny. Okay, I'm going to stop recording.
Although not Destiny the game, because that's just a continual series of bummers.
Yeah, no. Shack remains.
Shaq is always light in life. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to stop recording now.